Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here, December 17th, 2014. I'm Wa Ruler of Time. Here, as always, with Chris, Ruler T. Larios. What's going on, Chris?
Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I want to apologize in advance. I know some people last week listened to the episode, and they're like, what the fuck was wrong with the sound? And I was like, the sound was fine, wasn't it? And I went in, and I was like, oh, God, no, this sounds awful. Part of it was because I had done an audio editing on that one to kind of try to remove some of the white noise in the background, but I didn't realize, and yet again, another reason to add to my long list of reasons Skype is horrible, that my Skype was auto-adjusting my mic during the podcast, so I started out quieter than you, then it just kept boosting my volume up until I was louder than you, and I had no control over it, because even though I've told Skype every time since ever, never adjust my sounds. It just said, he doesn't mean that, and just did it anyway. So now I have to have my Skype audio settings up from now on, just watching it to make sure it's not like, if I turn away, it's just like, oh, it wants me at max, boop! It was bad. But no, otherwise, things are pretty good.
Yeah, so I think by the end of that, I was going to yeah, Nick, I agree!
Ah! Yeah, it wasn't great. But if you hadn't listened to the last episode, I did get a new version of that episode up, so you can listen to that. So there should be a better version. It's still not going to be great, but it's going to be better than the last version. But no, Nick, I'm 26 now. It's a whole new world to me. I had my birthday over the last week, but I kept very, very quiet, so almost no one wished me a happy birthday or did anything for me.
What's so special about 26 exactly, anyway?
Nothing at all. Absolutely nothing. But it went by without anybody having to, like, pay attention to me, which is the best way to celebrate my birthday.
Awesome. Then I won't wish you a happy birthday. Fuck off.
I always get, like, tons of people who are just, like, especially when I'm at work or something like that, or, like, happy birthday, and I hate that attention, so I always, like, try to avoid it. Inevitably, I'm like, I just don't want it to be, like, any, like, bad of a day, so I'm just going to stay home and do nothing, and somehow it still ended up being a really shitty day anyway.
Aww.
I'm just cursed to not have good birthdays. My birthdays just suck. So I'm, like, trying to, like, keep them as separate as possible. I'm like, if nobody knows... It's like Freddy Krueger. If nobody knows that it's my birthday, that he can't kill anybody.
That's oddly specific, isn't it?
It's very specific, but it's how my mind works.
Every person
matters.
For one day a year.
If no one knows it's my birthday, he can't kill anybody.
I think that could be an interesting premise, actually. Not necessarily, like, birthday, but, like, you know, just something that periodically happens to everyone or something like that, so everyone has to keep track of every single person that they know for fear of, like, triggering some horrible event just because of the way the universe works or something.
I thought you were going with, like, a day again, so I was like, yeah, like, every President's Day, no one can remember it's that, but if someone's like, hey, isn't it President's Day? Like, a black hole opens and it sucks in half the city. You're like, oh, God, you fool!
Yeah, like, if one person... or rather, you know, it would of course be like several thousand people for one day in the year have like some horrible curse, and so you have to be informed on every single person that you know and keep up with that. Otherwise, like, yeah, a black hole will open if you mention this one thing around one person on one day or something like that.
Oh, man, that's a...
Trademark Weekly Manga Recap 2014. If Hollywood hears this...
Well, Hollywood at this point is canceling more movies than they're making, Nick. So,
yeah.
You know, let's hold back.
Yeah.
That was our topical reference for this episode.
Let's be sure not to offend Korea on this episode.
Yes. At no point in this episode can we make fun of North Korea.
Get called up by Michaud and be like, I'm sorry, but pressure from that one time you insulted has forced us to remove the podcast.
One person online was like, hey, you better take that down or I'm going to punch you in the face, and I don't want to get punched in the face. I mean, I don't know who this person is. They may not even have fists. But just to be safe, we're canceling your podcast.
It's like, that's okay, I understand. I wouldn't want to be punched in the face either. Anyway, this episode is actually going to involve us talking about someone who would prevent you from being punched in the face and provoked by punching the would-be puncher in the face while being a patriot and a hero
with
ridiculous hair. Yeah, it's Boku no Hero Academia, which means My Hero Academia, and I could have told you that even if, like, I didn't know, because that's, like, some of the most basic Japanese we've seen.
I did not know that. I thought the main character's name was going to be Boko, and it was going to be Boko's Hero Academy. Turns out, no.
Close, because he's Deku.
That is true. What does Deku mean? Because I hear Deku, and I
think of the Deku nut, Deku stick.
Yeah, that's all I can think of is fucking Legend of Zelda. But I was like, it has to mean something else, right? Are they referencing Legend of Zelda as his fucking inspiration?
Mm-hmm.
Are they? Like, they're like, you remind me of the fucking Deku characters from Legend of Zelda.
I think that it's just something small. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm looking at, let's see if I can find it. I can't find anything. Oh, well. I know that they actually translate at one point in the series, but I can't remember what it was.
Nick.
Yes?
Literally, I minimized Skype to check something.
And now it's auto-adjusting?
And it auto-adjusted me back up. I don't get this.
Okay, can you fix it? Or are we going to have to, like...
I'm just gonna have to keep it open for most of the episode, and I may uninstall this version of Skype and install, like, an old version or something like that. I don't get it. It's fucking,
I'll check
like,
to see if I'm not auto-adjusting, too, because...
it's like, fucking something supernatural. I don't know what the fuck this is.
Mine hasn't adjusted me, at least, but jeez. Yeah, I heard your background noise suddenly go up, but yeah.
I don't get it. Anyway, carry on. Boku no Hero Academy.
I swear to God, one of these days we're just going to use Google Hangout or something. God. And now we're going to piss off Skype. Oh.
Yeah, now Skype's like, all right, you can shit on North Korea all you want on this
back
podcast.
To me. You'll see.
But don't you ever shit on Skype. We're canceling your podcast.
Wait, you can't do that. We don't even use Skype other than just recording it.
Suck it. Or Skype. What's your alternative? Touche.
Anyway. So, Boku no Hero Academia is, you might recognize this immediately, kind of inspired by Western superheroes, maybe just a little bit. Mm-hmm. To some extent. Yeah. It takes place in this world where there's, like, some sort of event where the people with these quirks emerge, and everyone with a quirk has some supernatural ability, and some are incredibly powerful, some are just very bizarre and almost useless. But it got to the point where, like, people with quirks actually started to outnumber people without quirks. I think that they say at one point 80% of the population has a quirk. And so because of this, people were like, hey, I can, like, be a superhero now. And so there are tons and tons and tons of superheroes in the world who cooperate with law enforcement and stuff like that. There are also douchebags who became supervillains and stuff. And so essentially, it's a comic book world. You know, there are heroes and there are villains. And in order to train the next generation of heroes, there is a Hero Academy, which is taught by veteran superheroes. The main character is Izuku Midoriya, who is Deku, and it's just easier to call him Deku, so he's Deku. So Deku has no quirk, but he still wants to be a hero. And so, of course, all his life is like, you don't have a quirk, you can't be a superhero. And so he's like, no, I don't want to give him up my dream. And so he gets to about, like, 13 years old, and he meets All Might, who is basically Superman. Basically Superman. Just an incredibly manly Superman who is always grinning and confident and saying random heroic sounding things. And so he's like, can I be a hero? Is there some way? And so, like, All Might saves him from some weird monstrous creature. And he's like, can I be a hero like you? And he's like, well, I think that might be impossible. But then all of a sudden, his muscles all disappear, and he turns into this really gangly, weird-looking guy who's constantly coughing up blood. It's like, oh no, you've discovered my secret. And so he says, it turns out that I have the superpower which can actually be gifted to other people. So he decides, after seeing Deku basically throw himself at this monster in order to save a classmate of his, that he's worthy of being gifted the power. He has the heart of a hero, essentially, because he went in to act even though he had absolutely no powers to help. So he starts to train him, and eventually he gets into the Hero Academy, and from there he has adventures and stuff. I think I covered everything important.
That seems to be the premise. In case you guys don't also know, this is done by Horikoshi, who is the mangaka behind Barrage, which we talked so highly about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is his new series at the Jump, and just to kind of cut to the chase, It's doing relatively well in Jump thus far. It's been ranking, I think, about the middle of the polls, a little bit higher.
It's been doing, I think, better than that. I think that, I mean, because recently it's been, like, top fiving routinely.
Okay, I haven't been able to see, like, recent lists. So the last ones I was working off, I think it was, like, eighth or something like that. But
yeah. I think that it might have been ranking in the middle, but, like, it's more recently started really picking up steam. So
it's a good sign. It looks like Horikoshi's going to have a chance to actually make a long-running series this time around. So that's a pretty good sign. But yeah, as you said, this is a series that has a very distinct kind of place amongst the other Shonen Jump series. For the moment you open it, it has that different art style that Horikoshi has, you know, very angular, kind of uniquely, almost like a graffiti style artwork to it in some ways, you know, with the way some characters look. They almost look, I don't know, like kind of like a harsh like drawing you'd see on like a sidewalk or like a wall in Shibuya or something like that. Very cool art style to it. But the fact of the matter is, it's also, you know, heavily inspired by American comic books. So it, you know, doesn't seem like anything else in the magazine. It doesn't have like that quasi fantasy saying or anything like that. It's going to be one that has its own unique look, and it's a very goofy, silly, fun world to it. So the first chapter I thought was actually really good. It has a bit of a weird ending to it. I like the ending, the emotional aspect of it, of like, yes, you can be a hero, and he breaks down to tears. Like, that's great. The only issue of it is that the first chapter set up, the second chapter is a montage, and then the third chapter is an introduction to like the titular school. So the first three chapters are really heavy in exposition and just world building. So you really don't get a lot of time to breathe in that span. But once the series starts to like kind of pace itself out beyond that, it gets really good.
Yeah, I love so much about this series. I mean, I grew up reading like superhero comics as a kid and stuff, but even beyond that, this takes that idea and it does it incredibly well. And you mentioned Horikoshi's art, the way that the characters all, you know, have a very unique feel about them in general. But also one of the great things that Horikoshi did that we saw in Barrage was that all of the characters had very different designs from each other and were immediately recognizable. And although all of the characters in the series are actually the same species, they're all humans, because of the different quirks and the fact that they're dressing up in extravagant superhero costumes and stuff like that, they also still look very distinct from each other. You know, Ibuki looks actually kind of similar to Barrage himself. They've both got sort of the same hair, just Deku has curly hair instead of more spiky hair, but it's still the whole Shonen hero all over the head, and he's a shrimp. But then you've got All Might, who has basically just an entire separate art style to him, because he's super muscular and constantly, you know, his face is constantly in shadow, so he looks badass and stuff. And then when he has to power down, he turns into, like, a completely different art style, because he's got this absurdly long neck. And the other superhero characters all look very different. There's a girl who basically has frog powers, and her eyes are incredibly large and round to give her that sort of feel. There are people who don't really look very human. There's like Abaku, was it? I forget Ibuki's rival's name.
I thought it was something like Bokuro or something like that,
something along those lines.
Explosion kid, basically,
right? And he looks basically like a pretty typical shonen rival type of character, but they all look so different. And like the first major villain that shows up has one of the most terrifying but like creative designs that I've seen for just somebody who's basically just supposed to be a guy. He's just got all these like disembodied hands just clinging to different parts of his body, and it makes it almost look like they're part of his body. It's just all this cool looking stuff, and it's like it all works because they're, you know, just superheroes and supervillains and stuff.
It's a very imaginative world. I think my favorite aspect is Bakugo, as you mentioned, because he looks pretty standard, but he, you know, he has his power where he can create explosions. It's like his sweat has like nitroglycerin in it, so he can like create explosions out of it. And eventually they all get costumes. And his costumes have giant gauntlets that look like grenades.
And it's like, oh, come on, you're so in touch. You just like your stupid theme so much. It's so stupid. And then it's just like, no, watch this. And he takes the pin out, and an explosion comes out.
It's such a cool fucking design that, like, I like the visual aspect of it. Even if the character himself may not look all that fascinating, he puts on this costume, he suddenly becomes a so, you know, distinct character in this world. And I love the fun that it's just kind of created by that notion of all these different powers and the personalities it gives these characters. I think it's one of the cooler aspects of it.
I mean, I believe that when we first brought up the series, I said, oh, that sounds a lot like Sky High. And you were like, what, that terrible-looking movie that I never saw? And I was like, yes.
That terrible movie I judged without ever seeing anything of it. I don't even think I saw a trailer for it.
And I was like, no, seriously, it was pretty good. But it takes that idea, because, you know, I think that the idea of, like, a superhero school is, like, what, 60 years old now by this point? 50 years old, at least. However old the X-Men is, or possibly older, basically.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure it's older than that. I'm sure as long as there was any point where there were superheroes, I'm sure there's been some kind of, like, what if kids had superpowers and had to go to school?
Mm-hmm. But it basically takes the idea, like, if you were told, like, okay, take some sort of superhero school premise and basically put it, you know, in a manga. And it would be like, oh, well, it would be kind of like this. And it's like, okay, take your idealized version of that, and basically I think that's what it is. It's obviously something that's by Horikoshi. You can see his influence in it. But I think that this is basically the best this could be executed in the medium it's executed
in. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of this series. It's only ran for about half a year or so, because mm-hmm. a little more than 20 chapters at this point. So we haven't seen the fullest potential of what this series can reach quite yet. I mean, at this point, if you went to, like, World Trigger, I mean, I don't even think they were really...
They didn't last 20 chapters, for one thing.
Yeah, I was like...
Oh, I thought you said Barrage, yeah.
No, I mean, World Trigger, I was trying to think. I think at that point, they may have just introduced Yuma into Border. I think that was about where they were. So, I mean, you think that there are so much more that this series has still yet to even reach yet. But what we've gotten thus far is highly promising, I think. Because, on one hand, you've created a very likable protagonist. This is a kid who, before he had any powers whatsoever, he was still the kid going out there and trying to make a difference. All he's wanted to do was be a hero. He's been staying up on them. Even before he got a power, his goal was still just to become a hero. You know, he still was going to try to enter himself into the academy without any powers at all. So this is a kid you can highly get behind. You know, the supporting cast around him is nice. All Might seems like a good guy. His mom's actually a central character. Well, not central, but she's a very prominent side character, which is, as we mentioned with Osamu and World Trigger, it's really rare to see a you know, protagonist where his parents aren't dead and actually play a part in the series. And his mom actually has some very emotional parts with him that I like. You know, there's stuff to get behind there. You know, the action is cool, the art's great. But the thing that we got, in particularly the most recent arc, is that Hirokoshi doesn't seem to have any limitations on what he's going to do with his cast. It doesn't sound like he's going to just limit it to, like, the few, like, the three or four main characters, so to speak. Because in the most recent arc, he gave prominent screen time to a bunch of characters who we just met, learned their names and powers in that moment.
Basically, yeah, when Deku joins his class, it looks like there's going to be pretty much four prominent characters. There's going to be Deku himself. Well, rather, within students within the class, they're going to be prominent. There's Deku himself. There's his rival. There's his love interest, who has gravity powers. And then there's the guy who ends up becoming the class president, who has, like, speedster powers. But then something happens during the training, and those four all end up squaring off against each other at first. But then we introduce this guy who has heat and cold manipulation, and he gets a prominent role. There's the girl with frog powers who ends up basically saving Deku's ass. There's the coward pervert with, like, weird sticky balls that he can produce. Just all these different characters that all get involved to some degree or another. Also, there's the invisible girl who is apparently just naked except for her gloves. Just, like, all the time.
It's kind of cool, because there was a point, they basically, like, had all these kids separate, and they showed all these different fights going on. Some got more focused than others, but there was a point where there was a fight going on with no major characters involved with it at all. It was one character who we kind of met once or twice, and then a guy who they revealed had electricity powers, and then a girl who had some other power, I can't remember what it was, but they gave all three of them a chance to, like, show off their powers and make it, like, a big deal. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And you know, there was strategy put into it and, like, a you know, kind of cool teamwork aspect into it. It seems like there's a lot of potential in this series for the side cast to get prominent roles, and it's not just always going to be the same two or three characters getting all the focus.
No, so, you know, it would be fine if it were, because Deku is a pretty damn likable guy. And yeah. We don't really know the main support around him other than All Might very well still. So. Yeah.
It's just, it's a very cool sort of promising aspect to it. Also, it's a series that seems to put a big creativity on the way it's been resolving fights or using kind of interesting strategy, because Deku's power at this point, he's slowly taking All Might's power. But as it is right now, it's too much for him to use consistently, so he could basically only use it in, like, one short burst. But he's, you know, slowly trying to, you know, usually just, like, a punch, but he's slowly figuring out new ways to, like, focus what he would have normally in one punch into, like, the small fingertip and use something small there. So, like, there's a moment later on where he's like, I can't use my entire power, so I'm just going to focus everything into just flicking my finger. And then, you know, I'll still have enough that if I need to, I can use a punch later on. And, you know, he uses that in some, you know, cool combo strategy to defeat some villains. It's a really cool aspect that puts a lot of mileage out of this power. Because as it is right now, it looks like his power is basically just going to be super strength of some kind. But they're making it a lot more interesting. And it's curious to see where this all goes. This is a series with very strange powers. It almost feels a little bit like a Law of Uweki kind of series. Because there's so many powers where, like, This seems so useless or so conditional. Like,
well, yeah, like the Sticky Balls kid actually even says so about his own powers. It's like, this is all I can do. I'm completely useless in a fight. I just want to go home and not get attacked by these villains. And then they do pull off the combo strategy, and his panic throwing sticky balls at the villains ends up actually helping them to escape safely.
And they even note when he has his powers, he's like, you know, I have these, like, wads of my hair that are sticky. I'm immune to it. But the healthier I am, the stickier they are. And he even makes a joke. He's like, I took a really healthy poop this morning, so my powers are working at peak efficiency. But, like, there's other characters. Like, there's a character who, when I first saw him, I thought he shot lasers out of his dick. It turns out later...
It's his navel.
It's his navel. But it really looked like his dick at first. But it's like...
Well, especially because he, like, does, like, a pelvic thrust.
But, you know, he notes, he's like, yes, I have the power to shoot a laser out of my navel, but if I use it too much, it'll give me horrible stomach cramps. Like, it's this idea of not making these kids overpowered. You know, all of them have a drawback of some kind to their ability. And it's kind of interesting to see how it's all going to work itself out.
Oh, when they do, like, the 100-yard dash or whatever it is, and he's just, like, turns around, shoots his laser navel, and so he projects himself backwards, and then he falls over, and without completing it, so he has to stand up and do it again. And he just finishes slower than the guy he's racing with.
It's actually a really funny series, too. It's not like shit my pants every chapter funny, but there's some really great moments in it.
When it chooses to be funny, it's pretty damn funny.
Yeah.
Like, All Might, whenever he's in his depowered form, is just, like, constantly vomiting blood up while he's, like, casually explaining things to Deku and stuff.
It's very amusing that way.
And there's a bit where, like, it explains how Deku got the nickname of Deku, and how he's just like, oh, it means he's small and worthless, and then in his big, like, you know, standing up for himself moment, he says basically... Like, his love interest basically has said, I actually like that nickname. I think it means that, you know, you have the vibe of, you know, never giving up and standing up for yourself and stuff. And so it's like, and now, from now on, the nickname Deku means this. It's like, okay, that's kind of cool, but it's so goofy. You're just, like, randomly deciding that.
It's goofy, but I love it. I love so much of this story. Like, there was an electricity guy, and he's like, you know, he can discharge all of his power. But whenever he discharges, he becomes like a fucking simpleton goober for like an hour. So he's just like, yeah, good job, me.
I fry my brain whenever I do this, so.
Go me.
Bird.
I think the series has an immense amount of potential. It's still incredibly early into the series run, so there's not a tremendous amount to talk about. What I've seen thus far of it, I really like. And I know a lot of people right now are like, I want this series in, you know, U.S. Jump. I want them to add it into the magazine. And though I'd be super excited if they added My Hero Academia into the magazine, I think I'm less on the notion of like, oh God, I hope they add it, just because at the moment we now have World Trigger, Food Wars, and Gakuya Hotai in the magazine. So I'm like, it's not as much of a matter of like, God, I want them to get more great stuff in there, because I'm just like, we have really good stuff now. So I'm like not missing it, because I don't notice it not being there. But I really wish they would add it in the same respect, because we don't get a lot of One Punch Man anymore, and I feel like this would fit really well in where One Punch Man was. Good point. So I really do enjoy this series a lot, and I'm really, really happy that Hirokoshi got another chance in the magazine, and that this chance is seemingly going a lot more favorably.
Yeah, it's already lasted 5 chapters more than Barrage did, and it's doing a lot better. So.
Yeah, it doesn't have any of the issues. It didn't have to wrap up already or anything like that. It's like, holy shit, you could keep building your world instead of suddenly having to end it? But I really have high OCCs. I don't think I'll follow it in Scanlations or anything like that, though. I really want to support Jump, so I would love if it gets into the magazine, I'll follow up with it completely, but as it is right now, I'm just happy to hear of its success.
Yeah, so 2 big thumbs up for this series. Hopefully we will get to cover it again someday, but for now we're going to head into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, the shorter than usual recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, because a lot of series are off this week.
We have no Fairy Tail or Seven Deadly Sins because Crunchyroll is doing its Christmas break now. So we don't have... We have Jump this week, but we don't have Crunchyroll. And then the inverse will be next week. There'll be no Crunchyroll, but there'll be... Or there'll be Crunchyroll, but there'll be no Jump. So we'll probably take that week off. I think we'll do that Yu-Gi-Oh! Episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we'll be back the week after that. But also, this is the last week of a Jumpstart series, but that Jumpstart series is going to be permanent anyway. So,
oh, has that been announced?
Gakuya Hotai, yep, it's officially in the magazine.
Sweet!
It is officially in the magazine.
I was going to be bummed because like, there's going to be no chance for me to do the dramatic reading while you played Phoenix Wright music, but now it's just like, no, permanent, yeah!
Officially in the magazine. If you read the last page of the issue, it mentions Gakuya Hotai is now...
I always didn't seem to tune out. I've been tuning out on that because they keep on putting Naruto at the end and don't read the first chapters. I don't need to read the first chapters again.
But yes, in case you don't know, our School Judgment series is going to be a permanent.
I'm so happy. For at least the next few months.
Yeah, I was like, we'll see how
it goes. Don't
fuck
this up, Japan.
God damn it. I know a lot of people, I fucking saw you and your sinister machinations of trying to fucking vote for E-Robot. No, fuck you. You didn't get it. It's gone. It's gone. It's going to be gone in like 6 goddamn weeks if there's a god. It is a shame for Agaha, though. But what are you going to do?
All right, let's move on to the recap portion now. Let's start off with Bleach. Last time, Ichibe did some bullshit, I don't know. He was like, I have control over all things black, and my brush/blade paints black, so the more I paint, the more control I gain, and then Yuhabaku is overwhelmed in black. And this one opens with him being overwhelmed by black, and then there just being this giant horizontal slash across him that completely covers him, and... It's chapter 609.
Are you doing what? The air quotes?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure. I want everyone to know the name officially.
Yeah, there's not really anything really goofy you can make from this. I mean, it's no super chumping from hell. It's just A. I don't know.
Quote unquote A. Like an ironic A.
A. So, Ichibe's like, oh, Juhabak, or rather, the one who used to be Juhabak, it must be painful to lose your name. Poor guy, how about I give you a name? And he's like, look, this is True Blade, Shinuchi, Shirafude, White Brush. If I had to use the more modern term, I guess this would be called my Bankai, because long before Bankai was born in this world, this was the first of all Zanpakuto. This sword can etch a new name on whatever is painted over by my Ichimonji. It's just like, wow, this is complete bullshit. But it makes way more sense than just, I can control black. This one is like, I cover up the names of stuff so that I steal their power. And his evolution is, I can then give it a new name. It's like, okay, that makes sense. That whole side thing of I can just control stuff that I paint is very different. Oh, yeah, and you volumed up again.
Oh, have I? Oh, great.
Yeah.
I literally fucking... I don't get it. All right, continue.
All right. So, he gives Juhabak the name of Kruali, or Black Ant. And so he's like, you are now like an ant, you know, like a black ant crawling on the ground, a fragile and fleeting life. And Juhabak's like, I had no idea. And Yujibe's like, yes, this is the difference in our powers, blah, blah, blah. Now I will crush you to death like the black ant that you are. And he, like, just summons this gigantic foot of energy and stomps Juhabak and sends him crashing through the platform and stuff. And at this point, Juga looks over his shoulder and is like, your majesty. Like, were you not paying attention this whole time?
Oh, oops. Hey, you should have been involved in that.
Now I'm worried. Oh. And he also summons giant hands to crush Juhabak between the palms. And then Juhabak says, I had no idea that I could see this much with my eyes shut. Whatever that means.
It means he had no idea he could come back even from this.
I guess. So, yeah, he suddenly teleports up behind Ichibe and blasts him through the back, like, through his chest and beard and stuff. And Ichibe's like, why aren't you dead yet? Look who's talking. You've got a hole in your stomach. So, the name starts that was painted on Juhabak's forearm starts to crumble away. And he's like, no, how is this possible? And Juga starts talking to nobody. He's like, his majesty's power is the power to see all that is about to take place. And the power his majesty sees cannot be used to kill him. His letter is A. The name of the power is the Almighty. And also the black that was like covering Jukebox starts to fade away as well. So, yeah, bullshit and bullshit and bullshit and bullshit.
Nick, do you think this is the end of Buddha Undertaker?
Probably.
Buddha Undertaker. I mean, I like this power better than, or rather, the explanation of what was Ichimonji, that power.
Ichibe.
Yeah. I like this explanation for the power better, as you said. It's not the fourth wall breaking meta of, I control black ink, suck it. And look.
It's a nice progression of the powers. You know, its basic form is I can, you know, cut the names in half. You know, second form is I can cover the names entirely. Third form is I can write a new name. It's like, okay, yeah, makes sense. But then in the middle, there was also that whole, by the way, I panned over you and I could literally control the power black.
What?
Color black.
What? Now, the new, you know, reveal of what Juhabak's power is, the Almighty, it's broken to shit. Its power is like...
What were you expecting?
I see into the future and I see your power and now it don't work on me. But as you said, yeah, it's like, I mean, what did I expect? I mean, this series is like, this series had Aizen, who had the ability to just, like, infinitely control people, like, the moment they looked at his sword. And he was only beaten by Ichigo from kind of just, like, silliness of, you know, releasing his power. And I feel like that's the same thing here. He can only, you know, defend himself against what he sees in the future. So, inevitably, Ichigo will beat him by unveiling something that even he didn't know he had, and thus Juhabak could have never predicted it, or something along those lines.
But, I don't know.
Or maybe Uryu helps. He's like, oh, but you also have the power of the A, and I can't. The Almighty can counter all my, I don't know.
You have the power of the lowercase A. it's called the Alrighty.
The Alrighty now. Alright, alright, alright. Uryu's just Matthew McConaughey from now on.
I was going more along the lines of, it's alright, you know.
I like Matthew McConaughey Uryu more.
I have the power of lowercase A. Already.
Yeah. He's just like, you know what I like about Soul Reapers? I stay the same age. They all look like the 17. And I could bang them with a bow and arrow.
Anyway.
If Uriah showed up, we could use that voice for him, but it's an arc all about the Quincy, so we'll never have a chance.
Right, right. So let's move on to Food Wars.
Go for it.
So, the cooking competition is underway. We pick up where it's actually halfway done. And this chapter is mostly about explaining Kurokiba's dish and stuff. He takes it out of the oven, and he's got it, you know, wrapped in the whole temperature wrapping special thing that he unveiled in the last chapter. Then we get to the chapter title. It's chapter 99, A Fang to Spearhead the Attack. And so he starts to prepare to, like, plate his dish, and Akira's like, I hope you didn't miss something. And Kurugi's like, fuck off. Or rather, he's like, my dish is going to blow your best weapon right out of the building. Which, you probably should have just said fuck off.
Yeah.
So Soma seems actually more curious about what Kurugi's up to, and Akira's like, oh, he's trying something we're both very familiar with. And he walks up to the judge's table, and Dojima is, like, narrating as he does so. The silver light of the full moon shines down like a spotlight as he walks to the judge's table. It bathes both chef and dish as if to purify them before presenting their offering. That's a very bright moon, isn't it?
A little overdramatic, guys, don't you think?
So he sets it down in front of them, and he's like, oh my god, it's all bubble inside the wrap. Because, you know, foreign. And so they're like, what are you doing? And so they have to unwrap their dish themselves, the judges do, and so they do so, and suddenly they're flooded with this wonderful scent, and Dojima's like, I'm naked in the ocean, and there's a shark over my crotch. I'm kind of frightened. You would be too. Don't blame me. So they're like, oh my god, this is amazing! And the dean starts to smile, and they're like, oh my god, it's the infamous grin! And they open it up, it's like, oh my god, It's full pipe cartucci. I hate Italian words. Cartuccio? It's a pipe dish, shut up.
It's fish in a bag.
It's fish in a
bag. There, I made a new name for it.
Bagfish. So they dig in and they're like, oh, it's really good. And also, there's this refreshing scent about it, and it's not seafood. And Kurugi was like, I use this herb butter. It's butter that's got finely chopped herbs and spices mixed into it, and I put a stick of it into the bags, and when I put them in so that it actually melted, and the scents were, like, put inside as it melted, and so on and so forth. And then they're all reacting well to it, and then Alice is like, oh no, here it comes. Mother is about to do her own version of the disrobing. Okay, context. The dean would, like, disrobe when he found the dish that he really liked. Like, all throughout the competition. And so he'd just be, like, in a loincloth or something like that. Or, like, just in pants and showing off his amazingly muscular, but somehow still, like, 70 years old body. And so they're like, she's gonna do it? And so she just launches into, like, this, like, 5-paragraph long review of the dish in perfect, like, not weird, accented, broken language. And so Alice is like, yes, when mother eats a truly delicious dish, she strips off her awkward speech and describes it in perfect, elegant detail. So she can strip off her just speech patterns.
She could strip off sounding foreign.
Yeah.
It's a pretty awesome power to have.
And then we get this, like, full-page spread of the three judges, like, basically being the cast of Free. Like, Dojima is swimming, and the dean is wearing, like, swim trunks and a jacket, and Alice's mother is, like, the trainer and is timing Dojima's time and stuff. Because, like, oh, they've become one with the sea, because fish dish. And Kuruga's like, ah, how's that, Hayama? But Hayama is, like, completely undeterred as he brings up his dish. And it's also carpaccio! And they're like, ah, you think that you can beat me with an appetizer? What the hell do you think this is? Some kind of farce? And Hayama's like, my carpaccio is no appetizer. It's an entree. And that's the end of the chapter.
Alright, because I haven't read many of the recent Food War battles. Are they usually this? I mean, I guess there's still a lot of time left, but, you know, it started last week. One third of it's done this week. I guess the next, you know, he'll be done next week, and then I guess Soma reveals his the week after that. Or that is that usually like kind of the pacing for these?
They have you tended towards, you know, one person makes a big impression with their dish, and then the next chapter, the next person brings up their dish and makes an impression, and the next chapter after that is when they actually at least start to make their decision. Some of the other competitions have been a bit different in terms of how much was shown before that. Like, for example, Soma, in his semifinals match, went up against a guy whose whole thing was that he would very closely study his opponent and then basically prepare the exact same dish that they did, but that his opponent would rather, and then go one step beyond it.
He's like, I see you made a hot dog, so I made a hot dog as well, and I put parsley on it up top.
Yeah, and they really play it up like, you know, because he would not only predict what they would do, he would predict how they would react to how he was acting, and he would predict that they would try to evolve during the actual course of the match, and all this stuff. And so Soma basically just did all sorts of different things, and was how they were reacting to each other during the course of the competition. So there was a lot more built into that one. But in general, it's like, what are they doing? They're doing this technique, and then, oh, here's the dish, here's the dish. Judgment.
Hmm. Okay, I gotcha. Interesting. I like the chapter. I'll be curious to see. I guess I'm less interested in, what is it, fucking Fragrance Guy's dish. I'm more so interested to see what Soma has planned up.
Right, because he's the one that's been built up and stuff.
But it looks like it'll be interesting.
Fuck you, pretty boy. I don't care about your stupid smell.
Fuck you and your stupid appetizer fish dish. It's entree. Fuck you.
It's an entree.
Yeah, I made it a pike too because it's a special ingredient. Whatever.
Well, we all had to use pike, so...
Dickhead.
Alright. Gakuhote. Chapter 3. Pretty Idol Irie Takanashi Photovoyeurism Case. So... This chapter begins on a kind of creepy note. She's 12, dude, and you're the, like, principal. Stop that. It's this, like, this idol girl, Irie Takanashi, is the victim in the case, and it shows her, like, having just finished changing, I guess, into her gym clothes. And so it's like, oh, yeah, you know, there's this photovoyeurism that's been going on. And then Pine appears in the office, and she's like... It is me, Sailor Prosecutor Pine. How do you even think of, like, a character like this, exactly? My prosecutor character is going to be obsessed with calling herself, like, a magical girl.
I can actually sort of see that for this series. Like, you want to make your prosecutors and your lawyers, like, have these distinct personalities. You're like, I have one character who just fucking is a magical girl. Like, she just fucking has, like, the fucking wand and the you know, wacky dresses and everything. I just didn't think they'd make her the villain.
So, I'm sorry, this series is so weird. So, Abaku, we get to his new law office, which is the elephant slide in the playground that he's just moved a bunch of stuff underneath it. And they're like, we want to play in the slide. No, it's my office now. Fuck off.
This, like, little fucking, like, first grader's like, we really like that slide. It's our favorite thing. Nope, law says I can take any part of the school and use it as my office. Fuck off. I'll rock for you.
Ah, run away. And so apparently he's decided to stay at the school where he defended Tento and stuff. And Tento's head still looks like a ladybug's shell. Even though that whole thing is over now.
Thanatosis will come up again, Nick.
Thanatosis! Because every now and then Tento just, like, bothers Abaku about something. He's like, Thanatosis. So, Sailor Pine comes up to bother Abaku, and she's like, I will cutely destroy your egotistic evil that doesn't care about inconveniencing others. And she poses, and her helper holds up, like, this light-up heart behind her. It's not, like, some sort of effect that only shows up the panel, because later on he's, like, carrying it on his back and stuff. He just carries this around so she can make a dramatic entrance. Oh, and Abaku is like, yeah, you're one to talk, by the way, because you set up a prefab in one quarter of the schoolyard. It's just this giant thing.
It's like this two-story building.
And she's like, oh, that's economic clout! So then we get a bit of a reintroduction to the characters, because it's the third chapter. And meanwhile, Tento wonders to himself, why did Inugami decide to stay at Tenbin Elementary when, you know, when the lawyers and stuff move around the country in order to do this? And to explain that Pine has basically decided to stick around until she can defeat Abaku. So it's like, okay, why is he staying around? Tento comes into Abaku's office and hangs out for a bit. He's like, oh, check out these files and stuff like that. Tento asks him right out why he wanted to stay at the school, and Abaku says... It's in order to kill a certain student. Well, that's dark. I don't know if you saw the picture that we got on Twitter from Infamous Planet. It was like the legacy of Sasuke lives on. Sasuke wanted to kill a certain person. Ibaka wants to kill a certain student.
It's fucking Sasuke's comeback in another series, and I don't know if I can deal with it.
I don't know. I think that Ibaka's way too likable and humorous and interesting.
For now, smart. Who knows? He might get magic eyeballs soon.
If he gets a love interest, he just shits all over, and then Tento falls in love with her too, but she doesn't like him, then yeah, we're gonna get worried, basically.
And Tenten just shows up to be in another series and she won't do anything.
Tenten's just one of the students. She keeps on being called to the eyewitness stand, and then she's just like, sorry, I don't remember anything.
She keeps being asked to make an argument, but all of her points keep missing.
And it's like, ah, the one thing that can defeat Abaku's Rumpa, complete illogical nonsense. I have no idea how to respond to that. Your argument makes no sense. I'm gonna go lie down now. At that moment, Uzomi, you know, one of the guys who kind of pressured Tento but was really his friend, basically, in the last case, shows up. And he's like, hi, I'm here to see you about the whole, you know, voyeurism case. And he's like, yeah, so we're researching this whole thing. It looks like a student here took them, and they've got the pictures for the case. And so Tento's, like, behind them, like, covering his eyes because he's embarrassed. And Ozomi's just like, eh, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, by the way, Airi Takanashi, she's like this idol, you know, she's 12 years old and a student at our school, and Tento is like this gigantic fanboy of hers, and he's got like her merchandise and knows her blood type and sizes.
So creepy. I mean, it makes sense, they're all 12, so it's not weird in that aspect. I don't know why it's so weird how perverted this series is.
Yeah, I have to wonder, too, like, wait a minute, she's 12 years old, did they give out the measurements to, like, fans? What?
She's 12, does she even have measurements yet?
Well, yeah, you can tell by the way like, her clothing fits and stuff that she does have, like, breasts.
I guess. 12, like, yeah, I guess that's yeah, fair enough.
I mean, she's pubescent, and, you know, if she's 12, then that might, then she's probably further along than, you know, the guys are. But it's I guess because so many of them just look like little kids that it's so weird. And also that they're 12.
I mean, they're also involved in fucking courtroom cases with fucking toddler babies with human faces as judges. So, I mean, I guess yeah. It's not that crazy.
Well, and also Japan. So, Baku's like, so why is the prosecution, why have you been charged for this exactly to Uozomi? I mean, because anyone could have set the camera up and stuff. And he's like, well, you know, Takanashi School Cubby is, like, right below mine. And then they go in to investigate the case, and Irie's got, like, this lock on it with, like, a punch pad, basically. And so they're like, okay, so let's see here. How did the perp set up the camera? The subject would likely know it's a normal setup. Do they have the key code? What's going on? And then at that point, Irie shows up with... I like how she's got, like... Pretty idol, Airi Takanashi, and her friend there is just like, Iron's friend. That's your career now. You're her friend.
Yeah, like, that's even labeled as what, like, it's like, she's friend. Okay.
And, her friend's name's Kaneko, by the way. So Kaneko gives everyone a hard time. He's like, oh, attorneys sure have it rough having to accuse defend the accused when it's obvious that they're guilty. And so it was always like, I didn't do it. Oh, yeah? Well, what about the eyewitness testimony? The girls happened... Yeah, she has a little ping shine sound effect, even though it's, like, coming from her hair instead of her eye. I don't know, whatever. I was like, oh, you were acting suspiciously in front of Irie's shoe cubby earlier in the day. And he was always like, look, I was looking for something that I dropped. Oh, well, you engage in bad behavior all the time. You're mean to girls, and you're a repeating offender of flipping skirts. Musical note. I don't know what the music was. Did she, like, sing-song that?
Yeah, like, you flip the skirt off and it's like,
ding, ding. Skirt flip. So Irie's, like, trying to break them up and stuff. And, she does... Okay, look. Kuniko does that thing where they explain something in a way that, like, nobody explains stuff. Because she's like, Recently, since Iri got famous, I don't know if you're jealous or something, but you've clearly become cold towards her. She told me all about it. Right, Iri? It's like, oh, yeah, but leave me alone. And so it was always like, who's the one acting cold? And basically, they kind of have this really awkward moment where they both don't say anything and are just kind of staring at the ground in silence. So it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, something's going on that they aren't talking about. Were they a couple? Were they friends? And they just don't want to talk about it? Whatever. So something is going on that's going to be revealed in the next chapter. Yeah, whatever. And Ibaku knows what it is already, but he has to not explain it yet because tension for the next chapter. I would be so pissed off if we didn't have the series anymore. I was going to say,
because it's really going to suck if we got three chapters of this, two chapters were our case, and the next chapter was starting a case, we didn't get to finish. Like, what the fuck? This sucks.
So Irene and Kuniko head off, and then Tendo's like, she's so cute! And he's got, like, steam coming out of his nose, and he's like, well, I've known her since kindergarten, so I don't really see what the big deal is like. And he's, like, holding up a sign that says Irene's or something. What? Oh, Irene's my life. That's even creepier. God. So then Uzumi looks up and is like, oh, isn't he being weird, Ibaku? And Ibaku's got this weird grin on his face. Like, what the fuck? You're so creepy. And Ibaku's like, ah, but I know the truth behind the eyewitness accounts. You two talking on different wavelengths, plus the likely spot where the perp set the camera, and how it was done, I know it all. Well, are you going to explain it to us? No. And Uzumi's like, so you do know. And Tento's like, what's going on? And Ibaku's like, no. Tento, you're just as green as that prosecutor. And Uzumi's like, yeah, he is. And Tento's like, explain. No. I'm going to romp the hell out of it for you. Then later on, Tento is like, goes into the school grounds, he searches around for his iron keychain, which he forgot in Ibaku's office, so he goes in underneath the elephant slide and he finds it, but he also stumbles across this newspaper clipping that says, bloody classroom session, education tragedy, and he starts looking over and he looks about through a whole bunch of more that are all about the bloody classroom session that Ibaku was involved in. And it's like, oh, an entire first grade class was massacred during a classroom session at a certain grade school. The bloody classroom session. And it was the impetus for the creation of the school judgment system. It has been called the first classroom session. And why does he have all these clippings of the incident? And he remembers Ibaku saying, I'm here in order to kill a certain student. And so, and then we just basically like cut to all the different people involved in the case. You know, just like Ibaku looking thoughtful and Pine preparing and talking to her servant, and Iron, like, staring out the window, like, all melancholy and stuff. And then, most bizarrely, like, it's a shot of a girl in the shower, and it's Kuniko, and so the shower, like, starts off, like, look at that 12-year-old naked body, you fucking lowly pervert. And then it pans up to her face, and she's like, it's me! Did you think it was Iri?
Oh, I totally misread that the first time through. I didn't even notice there was the panel above it with, like, the body without the face. I thought she was just a main to doing the crime. And I was like, well, that's a little bit fucking anticlimactic.
It's just like, first of all, breaking the fourth wall. Secondly, what the fuck? He's like, got this, like, all cocky grin on her face, and he's just like, I'll bet you thought that I was Iri. He's like, I didn't think it was anyone. It's a 12-year-old taking a shower. It's so judgmental of you.
Don't you? That'd be great. She just starts talking to you for the fucking manga. She's like, didn't you find it hot, Nick? You sick fucking pervert. You're just like, no.
Oh, 12. Well, would you thought it was half your Iri? No, she's 12 too.
What if it was both of us? I don't know what you think that would change. Well,
I mean, whatever floats your boat. I mean, I'm not gonna judge anybody based on who they love, but no, you're both 12. Your total age is not what I judge it by.
It's like, what if you add it together? Then we're 24.
Yeah, no, but your individual ages don't change. What if we were a 23-year-old and a 1-year-old? No! Anyway, it's like the last page is just them, like, preparing to start the classroom session and the square off and stuff. It's just like, it was such a weird thing that kind of like threw me off at the very end of the chapter. I don't know. I don't like this chapter as much as the previous two, But I still like the way that this series, you know, plays out, basically.
Yeah, well, I think the main meat of the series, it's the same way about Phoenix Wright, too, is that the main meat of the series is once you get to the classroom sessions and the mystery starts getting unraveled.
Yeah, I don't like poking around trying to poke the right thing in a large, empty room and hoping to collect evidence and talking to every single person along the way. I like just going, objection! That's you lied about that before! So.
And I think also the aspect of it is this, that we got a lot of stuff in this that necessarily, like, there wasn't a lot of investigation in this, you know. We don't, you know, half of this chapter was almost about stuff that isn't this case at all, you know, the whole bloody classroom and everything like that.
So, and the part that was the case was just Ibaku observing the way that Uozumi and Iri interacted and then being like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's something that, you know, I'm sure you can definitely pick up the pieces in this and sort of gather together what, you know, the resolution of this case is going to be. I don't imagine that this is something, like, I can't solve it, they didn't give me enough information, but it definitely wasn't something where I was like, oh, it's a long investigation, like, I see the makings of the case. It's sort of a different sort of chapter, but I still imagine the payoff to it in the court case will be satisfying. And ultimately, I still love this series because I get to play Phoenix Wright music in the background during it. Well, there was no objection.
Yeah, so you played, like, what, Silent?
I played the investigation theme song, and when you mentioned the bloody classroom, that's when the suspenseful music comes on, like...
Phoenix Wright is good music.
I think, like, my favorite part of Weekly Manga Recap recently has just been picking out the songs to use in the background. I'm almost making, like, this a fucking, like, visual novel at this point. All we need to do is voice...
It's not visual at all.
Well, I mean, like, if you're reading along with it, and if we just read off all of the dialogue and, like, wacky voices, it would basically just make the visual novel version of this.
Alright. So... I guess we'll move on then.
Yeah, let's move on. What, to One Piece, I believe?
Yeah.
Oh, no, High Fly Cluster.
Oh.
Sorry.
I didn't read it.
Well, One Piece got it. There's not a lot. High Fly Cluster, as we mentioned before, is on its way out. This week, last week we mentioned that the little girl has the power of Alpha Nobel, and she exploded, and the car that she was in started kind of screeching a little bit. And the guy with Beethoven's power kind of parks the car. We see Kandera in his car, which has been blown apart. She's like, the brakes aren't working, so we gotta jump off the car. They all jump off. They basically surround the guy with Beethoven's power. Then all of a sudden, the landscape mole guy shows up, and he's like, oh, well, I didn't think it would go this way, but I'll take her from here, and since you're useless, goodbye. And he pushes the Beethoven guy off the side of a, you know, through a wall, and he's about to fall off a bridge. Kandera saves him. He's like, okay, well, we saved you, but we have to go after them because he has the girl now, but our car's fucked up. And that's when the guy with Beethoven's power is like, my car is working, so I can drive you.
I just noticed something. When Kandera saves the guy, he, you know, he uses, like, his slash power to just, like, extend his, like, security baton so the guy can just grab hold of it so he stops falling. He's like, barely made it. Thank goodness for high fives. I'm just thinking, none of this would have happened without high fives, though.
Yeah. I mean, the series is already over, and I'm just like, I wish it was completely done since we had the magazine, because I keep forgetting it's in it. Every time I get, like, I'm reading the chapter of Jump this week, and I get to High Fly Cluster, I'm like, oh, right, this is still running. I keep forgetting. I
haven't hit 18 chapters yet.
And it's not as though it's getting more interesting. It's, you know, it's still kind of following the formula you expect it to, and it's just like, okay... Are we done yet? Like, can we defeat the fucking kid with landscape mole and end the series? Because you beat the guy who made the fucking powers, and there's nowhere to go from there.
There's nowhere to go up. Yeah.
I don't have a, you know, I don't want to be too negative on the series. It's not the worst. Like, it's just really boring to me.
Yeah. All right. Now let's move it to One Piece.
Yeah.
Chapter 770: The Spear of Elbaf. So this chapter picks up. Bellamy is continuing to use his spring powers to bounce all around the between walls and stuff, and he's challenging Luffy, and so Luffy says, hey, look, you gotta stop this, there's no reason for me to fight you, and Bellamy is like, oh, it's fine for me either way, so you just stand there and let me punch you, if you really think my determination is still that shallow, and he springs right into Luffy, He's got Armin Haki around his fist, and he punches the hell out of Luffy's stomach. Makes blood come out of his mouth and stuff. So, automatically doing better than he did last time.
He's lasting longer, at least.
Then we cut to the Pika statue, where Zoro is still fighting against Pika. Dodging, you know, the guy's giant stone fist and so on and so forth. What even happens here? Oh, Zoro manages to get a really big slash in and just, like, cut his you know, large artificial body, like, in half. And a whole bunch of goobers are like, "Ah, the pirate hunter Zoro! Take him down!" And they start shooting at him. And Pika's like, "You are truly a fool if you think knowing my power gives you a chance!"
I do like that he laughs later on, and it's like, "Pika, Pika, 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 Pika."
So, let's see, what exactly happens? I'm not really sure.
Columbus calls an attention, and I don't know if this is a devil fruit he has, or if it's just supposed to be he has so much authority that Doflamingo's men just respond to it, but all of Doflamingo's men get to attention, and then he grabs one of them, rolls him up into a ball, and then just crashes the rest of them.
So, yeah. So I was like, "Oh, hey, thanks. You're from the Colosseum, right?" "Yes, I am Orlumbus. I would marshal the forces of my Yonta Maria fleet to come to your aid if we were at sea, but I am undermanned, so you must handle the stone monster yourself. Aren't I cool?"
"I'm awesome. Goodbye." "I may or may not ever be back."
So then he looks up and sees Pika's face coming out of, like, the entire plateau, and he looks down at Zoro and he's like, "Pika, Pika, 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 Pika. Now there is no escape from mine." And Zoro's like, "What the fuck did you just do?"
That was the lamest laugh ever.
"Do you prom with her?" I'm just surprised that it sounded so stupid. And everyone's like, "Stop making him so angry." Pika just gets so pissed off. He summons all these gigantic spires of stone out of the mountainside. Starts trying to attack Zoro, and Zoro's just easily dodging around them. He's like, "I like that you're so huge, because the bigger they are, the better they slice." That was lame. Oh, well. Dellinger kind of scolds Pika as well for attacking where he can be hit. But then, what's-his-name boxer guy managed to get a hit in, and he's like, "Hey, I'm still fighting you." Then we cut to... I keep on forgetting Dunchin Joe's grandson's names. Oh, well. So, Baby Five is like, "Why are you doing this?" He's like, "What are you talking about? Just come out and say it! Don't pretend you don't know!" And she recalls, like, a bunch of different things they said, like, "My blade shall seek out your heart! You said I want your heart! Aha! You can't break my grip! You said I'll never let you go! Can you follow me at this speed? And will you follow me? Look, if you really want me that badly, then I don't care who I work for. Just say it! You need me, don't you?" And she's blushing, tears are coming out of her eyes, and he's just like,
"Huh? Do what now?"
She's so weird.
I love the gimmick. I had forgotten that was her gimmick for a while, and then I saw you.
Well, yeah, because she didn't do it very much during the flashback. Yeah. So then Mach Vice is, like, up on a perch from one of the spires that Don Chinjo came up with, and so he's like, "Oh, I've got a foothold now. Now I've got Hadrian and the Giant down. Who am I gonna go after next?" And then, meanwhile, down the ground, Hadrian and the Giant is just like, "Even the warrior of Elbaf is helpless against Sir Mach Vice. It is my dream to be king of all the giants, but instead, if I lose the match, I get turned into a toy, and when I am saved, I can't even repay my gratitude. It's pathetic. I sought to repay my debt even if it killed me, so how can I still be alive after failing? Is that all my gratitude amounted to?" And so Mach Vice comes down and tries to crush Zoro, and he's like, "Ah, destructive 1,000-ton vice!" And, pardon me. So the giant, of course, says... Hadrian says, "Zoro, let me handle him." And he's like, "Oh, you think you can get me, Hadrian? Fine, 10,000 tons! I'll crush whatever bones you have left to break!" And Hadrian rears back and punches, and he uses a technique he calls Gungnir! All the bones in his arm shatter. The bones in his leg shatter. But even so, he sends the guy just flying into the sky, so high up that he gets bashed against the birdcage, and is presumably sliced to pieces. Holy shit! So, this was kind of unexpected.
We know he's not dead.
Well, no. Because nobody dies in One Piece except for Ace and Whitebeard. But...
Well, that and we see him after he you know, hits the cage and he's in One Piece. I assume he just hits the top of the cage. He's too heavy to, you know, for the steel to cut, and then he'll just fall back down to the ground defeated, even though he should die like 1,000 times over.
But, yeah, especially if he's going to build a momentum while weighing thousands of pounds and fall straight to the ground.
Not even thousands of pounds. Tens of thousands of pounds. He's 10,000 tons. So he's like...
200,000 pounds.
Good lord.
That's... Oh, wait. 2,000 times 10,000 is actually... I'm sorry. I did 20 instead of 2,000. It's 20 million.
Good lord.
Yeah. So anyway. Zoro is just like, all right, good job. And when you wake, the cage will be gone. Because Bajin collapses after shattering his limbs doing this punch. And I was like, well, that was unexpected to see this character get such a big focus during the chapter.
It's interesting. On one hand, I'm a little bit disappointed because Mach Vi's, this seems to be the end of him. I doubt he's coming back from this. You know, and the giant, you know, his story's fine, but it's all kind of been told within this chapter. I haven't had any reason to really suspect he was going to be a larger character in this story, so it just kind of felt a little bit abrupt at this point. And I can kind of understand the notion that, you know, in this, Oda doesn't want, you know, all these officers that he's released. The fact that half the Straw Hats are gone at this point kind of shows
right.
that not all of them are going to fight members of that. You know, we see Cavendish and Bartolomeo out there. Maybe they'll get their fight shown, but as you said, Dellinger is fighting somebody, and I think, you know, Lao Ji is fighting somebody else. I think he's fighting Don Chinchou or something like that. So I guess I understand from a perspective of Oda, who maybe wants to have more fights, but he's like, I can't, you know, all these fights, I almost always have to up my game, you know, have a new, awesome, cool attack, and maybe I'm just kind of wanting to do some new fighting styles and stuff like that, you know, and have new things, show off new things that I haven't been able to before because the Straw Hats didn't have those capabilities. So I can kind of understand
right.
in that regard. It was just a bit awkward. As I said, unexpected, a little bit strange that one of the people was kind of defeated without showing anything that cool at all. I thought we were going to get a little bit more out of Mach Vi's to be like, oh, okay, he's not just the same thing as Miss Valentine, but in a muumuu. But
right.
he ended up being the exact same thing as Miss Valentine with the muumuu. It still works.
And it was actually a less interesting character too, because he literally was just like, "I'm gonna jump on you."
I jump it away a lot. Smash. I don't dislike the chapter. I just thought it was a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, well, there's two characters I don't really care about.
Like, there's other fights going on that I would, you know, I do want to see. You know, obviously, I think it'll be cool to see Zoro go all out against Pika. I fucking can't wait to see Bartolomeo fight against, I think, Gladius or Pika, I think it is.
And Frankie against...
That's going to be awesome. But it's just like, I guess you have to beat everybody, and this is the way they wanted to kind of...
There's all these different officers, and there are so few Straw Hats.
And the fact of the matter is that Mach Vi's might end up just being the blue note of the group. You know, a guy who's defeated early on just, you know, didn't have a full
fight. Just because.
Yeah, like, they showed him being beaten, and that's sort of the start of the turnaround for the series, or the fight. So, you know, that could just be what this is.
Right, so let's move on to Toriko. Gourmet 305, Playtime Prep. So this is all about the group undergoing monkey martial arts training so that they will stand a chance against Monkey King Bambino the next time that they meet. Okay, this explanation is so fucking stupid. Alright, so here's what Kaka says. The basis of monkey martial arts is the art of dodging power. It is not so much a skill as a honing of every cell in one's body. Every gourmet cell possesses an excellent appetite, but otherwise their personalities and abilities are unique and widely inconsistent. So all the different cells that are gourmet cells in the body have, like, different traits. Each individual cell has a different trait, and so it's hard to sync them all up. Before you can train in monkey martial arts, you must unify the wills of your 60 trillion cells.
Okay. this isn't even the ridiculous part yet.
So, They're like, all right, in order to most accurately catch the flow of energy, if you misperceive your opponent's moves or power, you cannot accurately cope. In a sudden downpour, some cells would consider themselves under attack and be on their guard, and other cells will be overjoyed, and so on and so forth. You have to be able to effectively parry all kinds of forces, even gravity. And it's like, oh yeah, the monkey at the entrance to 100G Mountain, he was hopping around and stuff. And it's like, yes, he's a monkey called EII. And so basically he's like, yes, gravity is another kind of energy. The cells that perceive it as a stressor try to repulse it, but some cells don't try to fight it, they just sidestep it. If every cell decided to sidestep it, gravity would flow through your body instead of stopping it.
I love the notion of it. It's just like, alright, it's not a matter of you have to be strong enough to resist this gravity. You have to make it so all of your cells just let gravity pass by you, so your body is like a fucking sieve than a bowl. And that's
also
how you beat gravity.
Also, gravity is not a pushing force, it's a pulling force, you fucktard.
It's like this notion of like,
if you train your cells, Chris, you can defy the laws of space-time.
You can just let gravity pass by you. I guess you're just letting the extra gravity pass by you, or presuming, I guess, then you go 0G and you just start floating. I don't know where the end to this is, but okay. Let's go with this. You can make your cells just say, gravity, go by, please. Thank you.
So he...
Oh, God, it's so stupid, Nick.
So Kakashi gives each of them a BB pill bug. And is like, look, they're these tiny little things, but they can roll away at incredible speeds and so on and so forth. So it's like, all right, I'm going to throw these. You're going to try and catch one. And so, or rather, she tells them, all right, throw these up in the air and try to catch them. All right. And it just crashes, it floats, it stops in the air and then crashes down. It's like, what the fuck? How did this happen? And Kaga's like, yes, it becomes heavy or light, speeds up, stops, or becomes smelly. What?
Oh yes, and it can excrete a poison because we needed something for Coco to do.
So they're like trying to juggle this thing and it's like changing direction in the air. It's suddenly getting heavier when they do manage to catch it. They're like, oh, we have to sync up ourselves. And it's like, look, the EII has already mastered this practice so much that they can already juggle three. And they're like, what? Come on. This is so stupid.
My favorite part of this entire chapter is he's like, you all have to do this. And Zebra's like, no, this is fucking stupid. I'll be off doing my own training. And then he just fucks off. I fucking love Zebra. He's the one dude who's like, this is stupid. Bye.
Remember how in, like, Dragon Ball Z, like, Yamcha and Tien and Chiaotzu and Piccolo, when they died and they started training and they had to do all the things that Goku did to train with King Kai, and Piccolo was just like, this is pointless, I'm gonna send her to this tree instead. And he was still really super strong when they revived him for some reason, he was just stronger.
He was way better than all of those guys anyway. That's the same.
He didn't have to do anything, he got incredibly better.
I want this exact same thing to happen for Zebra. He's gonna be like, I didn't do any of your stupid fucking juggling, and I'm still just as strong or stronger than all of you dickheads.
What did you do to train? I went to the most powerful gravity in the mountain and I just got used to it.
I just stood under it for a really long time until my body got used to it. And instead of all my cells saying, okay, just go by gravity, I just got really, really strong to resist it. Because that would have been the logical, like in the Shonen world, that would have been the logical fucking explanation.
Instead of stepping aside like pussy, they all go, fuck you, gravity, and just push it back up into the air like, man.
You want to know what my cells are learning how to do? They're learning to punch gravity back stronger. Oh, man. It's such a... Alright, so...
Yeah, they say, like, oh, we have 3 days left to master monkey martial arts, and then we cut up to halfway of 100G Mountain. The Monkey King was still playing hide-and-seek, and he's just, like, crouching in some cave somewhere.
So, we got an email last week from, I believe it's Battleite is the name on Twitter, And it was him sort of explaining why Toriko has been the way it is and his sort of defense of Toriko right now.
Okay.
He's saying as he's playing Devil's Advocate. And he's knowing, he's like, you have to realize that Toriko is a series that has a lot of parody elements to it, you know? This is a mangaku who's well known for his gag and parody series. Apparently, Eiji from Bakuman was actually based off of him. So he says our ability to read the series will skyrocket if we read it more tongue-in-cheek, like a One Punch Man or something like that. And to a certain extent, I can actually, you know, I can totally see that. It's a series that I feel like has to be almost somewhat self-aware of the ridiculous notions it puts out there. But so many of them are played out in a way that doesn't have that wink accompanying it to be like, oh, I know this is stupid. It's just so many times that I'm just like, I don't know if I can completely buy into that.
I'll buy into whenever Bambina shows up and his balls are hanging in your face. And he's like, you gotta collect his testicles. Like, yeah, okay. Kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of winking at the camera. When they're like, by the way, all the cells in your body have different wills and they have to step aside from gravity. First of all, that's not even funny. If you're trying to make some sort of commentary about how the training methods in manga are ridiculous, well, fine, but why do I have to sit through it when it's boring? And why is this happening? Have these guys done anything of importance, really, since the time skip?
The main cast? I mean,
yeah.
Toriko revealed that he had the blue demon inside of him.
Yeah, but they haven't accomplished anything.
I mean, they got air. That's accomplishing something.
Yeah, but they didn't, like, overcome a challenge, aside from Toriko nearly being killed by the Dharma Horse and being saved by Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the problem we've had.
They haven't accomplished anything of importance to then say, yeah, let's go on a training arc, like, less than a year after the big time skip.
We've already had, you know, a couple little mini training arcs in different ways, or power-ups or things of that nature, so it's, you know, nothing.
I just don't expect, like, let's have a time skip, then nothing will happen, then the characters still need to get stronger after the goddamn time skip, so let's do another training arc.
I remember they were all supposed to have gotten stronger having eaten air, because it was supposed to, you know, activate gourmet cells. So they got that. That would, you know, I still proclaimed, like, oh, okay, I guess we need to get stronger because, fuck it. And I don't know where their confidence came, but they're like, oh, we're all stronger now. They got stronger. They didn't do anything with that strength. It's not like they overcame a challenge with it. They beat that one Monkey Mountain thing, but I assume they would have been able to beat that had they not powered up anyway. And then this happened, and they're like, we have to get stronger again. It's just, it's sort of a weird place that the series is at right now, where the basic premise is, like, we have to go to these eight continents and find these eight ancient foods, but on each of these eight continents is one of the eight strongest creatures in the entire world, and we have to keep encountering them, but we can't beat them, because if we do that, we have nowhere to go up from there. So, but we still have to make them a challenge and still have the heroes directly fight them, so give them training arcs, but they won't have a lot to do. We need to showcase the danger so they'll look like they're dying a lot. But they can't actually die, so they'll be poison dolls, or they'll have curing water, or it'll be an ultimate routine, or, you know, whatever reason it is. It's just, there's not a lot of Toriko right now that's been consistent in building towards the next moment. All the time it just sort of seems like erratic, like, okay, now training arc. Oh, now a moment where everybody looks like they've died. Okay, now a moment where they beat someone up really quickly, or it's just, nothing seems to have really had the cohesion that we've maybe had in previous arcs, where everything was, like, slowly self-contained and paced properly. Everything's just kind of juddering recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's disappointing, because I really liked Toriko before, but it was almost as though Toriko was like, well, Naruto's ending, so there needs to be a stinker big series out there somewhere. I better take over. This is my chance to step. I'm going to grab that brass ring, Nick.
It's these damn millennials' fault. Don't have any work ethic.
Don't do enough training arcs.
It's definitely not the fact that we write crap. Oh, God. Not out of touch. All right, World Trigger. Chapter 87, Tamakoma 2, Part 2. So, the round has basically just ended from the last chapter. Karasawa has been watching the action, and he's approached by Jin, who's like, so when do you watch the Rank Wars? And he's like, oh, well, you know, so Tamakoma 2, that I'm congratulating them on their victory. And he's like, by the way, how's Mikimo doing? Oh, yeah, he'll be fine. The press conference kind of set back his recovery. Yeah, sorry. So he asked him why he had Osamu talk to the reporters, and he said, well, they wanted someone to blame, and wasting Mikimo as a scapegoat didn't sit right with me. And so he's like, you know, after the invasion, 26 people quit Border, but after that press conference, 5 times that number applied. More companies want to be sponsors. So Jin puts this as, are you saying there's a Four Eyes effect? No. No, he's not.
Can we call it that anyway?
No.
Aww.
Your goggles are stupid. Aww.
Bummer.
So, you know, he basically says, regarding someone, he carries risk, but some people value that kind of person, and I'm one of them. So, he's like, hey, he's got a tough road ahead of him, but, yeah, let's just keep going. He's like, well, I'm not as quick to move on like you are. Well, I used to play rugby, after all. What the fuck does that mean? So, they meet up with some of the people at Tamakoma, and, little annoying kid is like, I am very proud of you. Shut up. Your helmet's stupid. And Konami's like, well, it's only natural since I'm training you, Yuma. And she, like, pats him on the head. And he's like, yep, I'm honored. So, I like the speech she gives after this because she's like, I like the bomb group you guys pummeled. The middle B-rank group you'll fight on Wednesday is kind of so-so. Oh? Well, what about the top group? They're mostly so-so. Okay, well, what about A-rank themselves? They're super so-so.
I forgot to comment, but I really do hope it becomes a gimmick for that one director that any moment he just doesn't want to respond to a question, he just responds with, I played rugby after all. Like, I used to play rugby. Like, all right, I don't know what that means about your Starbucks order, though.
It's like, well, Mr. Karasawa, the names are invading. All right, look, I played rugby, so we'll be fine.
I used to play rugby, everybody.
Yeah, didn't he say that? Didn't he say something along those lines where he helped that family
like,
to evacuate?
They were like, we didn't expect you to be physical. He's like, well, I did play rugby after all. And that kind of fit. You're like,
this is why I'm physically strong, because I used to play the sport, yeah.
He's like, well, I'm not quick like you are. He's like, well, I did used to play rugby.
I meant quick-witted. Well, I did play rugby.
I just hope that becomes this thing. Like, there's a chapter where we just see him in his house. He's reading his newspaper, and his wife comes up like, we need to have a talk. He's like, well, I did used to play rugby, and then he just gets up.
That's what I'm talking about.
And then he just gets up and leaves. It's just like the conversation's over now. Because he's only said it as he's leaving conversations. So it's just his way of ending a conversation.
He like talking to his friend at the bar. So why did your wife like decide you needed a break? Well, she sat me down and we had this talk. And I told her that I used to play rugby. And you think that fixed it? Well, I did used to play rugby. What does that mean? Where are you going?
What happened then? Well, then I got up and left the room.
Like this.
Because I did used to play rugby. All right, sorry, carry on.
So they decide to start researching their opponents, Suwa and Arafune squads. And so Kyosuke starts to brief them. He's like, well, Suwa isn't... And then... Scruffy Hottie is like, that's not Scruffy Hottie, that's Beefcake, isn't it?
Scruffy Hottie was Kyosuke, and then something Beefcake was the other guy.
Something Handsome Beefcake or something like that?
Something like Dark or Quiet Beefcake or Silent Beefcake? Something like that?
Something along those lines. So he says, like, all right, look, they can do the research. His name is Reiji. I don't know why I bothered.
Kyosuke says, like, you know his name, but... Still like,
no, I have to know his nickname. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I have to know what Konami called him once.
What does Konami call herself?
She's super awesome. She's not so-so.
She's not so-so. So, Reiji says, look, you know, you guys can go do the research yourself. That's, you know, part of the test, basically. And Sakura's like, oh, well, can I help them? No, it's part of the training. They're not going to have us to back them up if they have to go into a real fight. So, we see a meeting of Suwa in like a cafeteria or a classroom or some sort of hangout area, And they're like, oh, isn't Tamakama 2 the one with the albino shrimp? Yeah, and the four eyes who ended up drawing with Kazama. And that sniper kid who blew up the building. And their operator is like, I've never heard of any of them.
Dumb matter.
I don't care.
We're not watching.
I got a lollipop.
We're not watching yesterday when someone blew up a fucking house with a sniper rifle.
Nope.
What? No, I was sick yesterday.
They like all cluster around one person's like pad as they watch the replay of Yuma and Chika kicking ass. And he's like, "Oh my god, so powerful!" Yeah, and the sniper is Reiji's pupil. How do the physics work in that relationship? He's just like looking at. He just like imagines like Chika standing next to Karasuma, who is for some reason also really really fucking tall and a gorilla.
That's Reiji, Nick.
Karasuma Reiji, I'm sorry, Mr. Karasuma is different. Yeah. He's like, what's that beefcake gorilla thinking? And Rui, the operator, is like, Reiji is a smart beefcake. No, that's not what I'm talking about. So they're like, okay, so that explains it. All right, how are we going to take care of this? And the white-haired kid beat up Midorikawa. How did you fare against Midorikawa, Hisato? I got four once as a fluke. Well, shit, we're kind of fucked, aren't we? All right, we'll stop the shrimp for 2 seconds and blow them away. And, yeah, we'll just basically shoot them a whole bunch with our gunners as their strategy. And the sniper squad also meets up and they're like, oh man, what is with that Chika girl? And they're like, well, she's, she makes her location really obvious because she's basically a cannon. So we'll get her before she makes her second shot. And, I like how we're just meeting the teams and stuff.
Getting a little bit more. I mean, last time they were all just feeders into making, Chika and Yuma looks super awesome, but this time clearly we're going to get a little bit more of a combat. And this is a whole chapter sort of discussing how these two teams approach a battle.
Right. And so it also shows the tremendous difference between Sua squad and Arafune squad, because Sua squad is just like, so what are we going to do? I guess that we'll have this guy confront Yuma and then shoot them a whole lot. Well, I get it blown away too? Shut up. And then Arafune squad is like, okay, what are we gonna do? We're gonna have to, you know, plan our strategy and so on and so forth. And the operator comes in and she's like, I've been researching them, and that one kid had lost a whole ton to Midorikawa. And they're like, all right, well, we'll gather their data and I'll memorize their habits. And then the only issue would be where they'll choose. And then the Tamakoma squad meets up with Usami in order to plan their strategy. And they're like, all right, let me hear your analysis. They're like, well, this is what Sua squad does. They make this formation, and their attacker tends to sneak around from the side if they try and focus too much on the gunners. The snipers like to surround the area, and so on and so forth. And Chika's like, yeah, I need to make sure that I don't get found so that, you know, they don't surround me and take me out after I make my shot. And Usami says, yeah, and I'll show you how to, you know, I'll show you an escape route in any situation. That sounds a little bit iffy. How can you make sure to have an escape route that works in any situation? Magic. Or maybe she's talking about how she'll, like, point out an escape route no matter the situation. Something because like she's that. The operator?
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, she's the operator, so she might have something that ace up her sleeve or something like that.
So they say, like, yeah, we thought about, you know, like, shooting the buildings out with Chika's Ibis so that the snipers don't have good sniping points, but she'll be discovered. So instead, she's only going to shoot the critical moment. And someone says, by the way, there's one more factor. We didn't use it yesterday, but the lowest-ranked team gets to pick the battle stage. They're like, okay, so we should use the stage that will have a bunch of terrain to block the sniping of our Fune squad. And they're like, okay, yeah. And that's basically in the chapter. We skip ahead to the day of the battle, but that's it.
It's interesting. Now, this is going to be one of those chapters that I think can only exist in the fact that the series has enough good faith in it that it can be slow. You know, it can take its time to build things up, and that'll ultimately be a much more, you know, enjoyable factor when we get to the conclusion of next week that, you know, we have had time to build these squads up. But I think it's kind of interesting. Arafune squad seems like the smarter of the group. You know, they're, you know, snipers. They're the ones who don't immediately get super intimidated. They're like, yeah, she might be super strong, but she makes herself obvious. We can, you know, smoke her out. You know, they're coming up with strategies. But it's worth noting that Suya's squad is actually higher ranked than them.
Yeah.
So it may be
the flashier, stupider looking team is actually currently the better one out of all three of them.
So I think we might be in for an interesting surprise in seeing all those teams meet together. It's just going to be kind of cool to see what comes out of this. I mean, ultimately, how all this, you know, ends in execution will be the real payoff to it. But right now, I mean, this seems like a really cool thing that we're gaining in these rank wars. And it's kind of nice to kind of have something a little bit simpler than the invasion to work with.
Also, don't forget that when they battle, that's when they're going to have their new uniforms.
New uniforms! Oh, fucking Christmas week, stupid fucking Christmas. This makes me wait a week to see the fucking characters in fucking coordinated outfits. Bullshit. I hate Christmas.
Bah humbug.
I wish it was never around.
Alright, I think that's going to do it now.
you want to do a little bit of Q&A?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to work back to a few Q&As that I think we may have missed.
From ancient times, long past.
From long back in the ye old months of September. Do have an email from David Lay. He says, "Hi, Wyvern Roll of Time, Roll of T. Huge fan of the show. Been listening to weekly manga recap pretty much since it started and helped me discover some manga that I've really enjoyed, such as Vinland Saga and Barrage, so thank you so much for that. I have two questions. First of all, with Naruto drawing to a close, are there any characters you wish had gotten more focus or more important things to do?
Could you repeat that last bit?
Are there any characters you wish had gotten more focus in Naruto or more important things to do by the end of it? Any character?
Rock Lee, Shikamaru, Neji other than dying, Shikamaru's whole team, B, yes. Basically.
Okay.
Lots of them. Yeah.
I think we kind of went over this a lot during our weekend.
Well, this was from September.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm just saying, I think we've probably gone through characters that we thought that kind of got the,
short end of the stick
on those. Rock Lee would, again, be one of those. The second question, I'm sure you heard that History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi is coming to an end. I was wondering if you one day...
Has come to an end, yes.
As if you were one day planning to give it a review. I remember Nick saying he used to read it, and I thought it would be worth a look.
It's not worth reading, dude. It's like 500 chapters long, and like 300, 400 of them are crap. It's not worth reading in order to give it a review. It's so long and pointlessly long, too. And then it just, like, ended. Just randomly ended. Out of nowhere. So, yeah. Nope.
Okay. Question from, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, Yuvraj Gill? I'm sure I fucked that up completely. And hold on, I just need to make sure, because I think Skype's still auto-adjusting me, so I'm going to have to jump back and forth, because it does it if I spend more than, like, 10 seconds out of fucking Skype. I have a question. I personally believe Kubo is a good writer, contrary to all the evidence against that belief. Because in all of his work, even Zombie Powder or that one-shot Bad Shield, he told a really good, engaging story. Even the beginning part of Bleach, especially the Grand Fisher arc, was really well done. I believe where it all went wrong was where he started introducing too many hero characters and trying to give each of them something to do instead of focusing on the main character we were following the series all the way through. Kubo is really bad in many characters and doesn't take his time to tell a good story. What do you think on that? On his theory of as that being the reason Bleach is bad because too many characters?
It's one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think that kind of simplifies it a bit too much. And I've said it, you know, many times in the past, Kubo is capable of writing good stuff. He just, you know, hasn't recently. And I think that is partially because of, you know, introducing too many characters and stuff like that. But there are certain things that, you know, he's done that don't have that excuse. The way that he has had his villains, you know, be built up and then taken down, that is not excused by just having too many characters. Aizen had plenty of focus in order to build him up. He was just not interesting when he, you know, looked like he was about to triumph and then he died. Or got defeated, rather. So... That's a fair criticism, but you can't attribute everything to that one misstep.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do think it is one of his biggest problems is having too many characters because it focuses the story to go a lot of places, but he has problems beyond that. Even though I will say that there is a lot of merit to that, you know, inside of too many characters, because you think of all the times, even when we're talking about Aizen, one of the biggest problems was that he spent so much of that arc in the DSI, I beat everybody. And part of that was because there were so many characters he had to beat. You know, he had to add all the visors, and then Urahara has to show up, and then, you know, this person has to show up, and he has to beat this person too. And, you know, I mean, if you think that the cast was smaller, there would be more time for moments that maybe feel bigger, maybe like Kenpachi's fight against Unohana and things of that nature, so.
I can read some of the questions. Where did you leave off from, so that we can, like, avoid having the auto-adjustment problem happen?
I have starred series. I don't know if you can
see. Yeah, I see the stars and stuff.
Go to proxy questions and manga recommendations, and then work
from okay. there. Okay. Is it under, like, more or something?
No, the title is questions and manga recommendations. You see the stars.
Yes, I do.
It's going to be September 22nd. I guess you might just have to scroll down until there.
Okay, yeah. Proxy. Oh, that was the last question you meant.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the one we're on currently?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What's recommendations? Oh, there's more to it. Scroll down, you idiot. Questions. Do you plan to give Shokugeki no Soma proper treatment? Like discussing that one chapter which didn't even completely side story. Da, 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 da. No, we're never going to read Shokugeki no Soma. I'm sorry. Never.
I do plan to catch up on it. I don't know if it'll ever be like a special episode, though, of like, hey, we caught up on it now.
Well, we already covered it once, didn't we?
We did, but it was only the first
volume. It was a long time ago. Yeah,
but it was only like the first volume or so.
Yeah. Two, what do you think about other special events outside of Halloween month? I was thinking about concentrating on certain other works, or certain authors' works. It has to be an exceptional author, of course. For example, Naoki Urasawa with 20th Century Boys, Monster, and Pluto. Or Yoshihiro Togashi with Hunter x Hunter, Yu Yu Hakusho, and Level E. It could be really interesting discovering some similar ideas, themes, characters, and tricks that author leads to. But we kind of ended up unintentionally doing that during October now, didn't we?
Yes.
It's an interesting idea, and we may pursue that in the future, but I think that we basically have already pursued the idea of doing more theme months that we'll hopefully do again in the future. You know, obviously Naruto-vember is over and never coming back because it's gone now, but, we have discussed the possibility of doing, like, a regular theme month as well, so we are considering that.
Maybe if it's not, like, a theme month per se, like, oh, we're, you know, in May and we're talking about spring manga or something like that, maybe it'll just be some like, hey, during this month we want to make it a thing and we're going to read all of, you know, fucking Kubo's stuff or something like that, you know, we're just going to try to. It's just a little bit difficult because many of the theme months of that regard, you know, it's a matter of reading long-running series, and it's like, how many of those can you get to in a month?
Alright, next is from Mike Layton. Three questions. First off, he says, still loving the recaps and the recommendations, and I was so excited when you answered my question about the Apocalypse Dragon last time. Keep up the great work, you two, and I hope you don't mind. Two questions. This is three questions. You lied. You might have gotten the first question in the comments or via email, but I had to ask. One, Marvel's doing a big multiverse story with Spider-Man called Spider-Verse, where multiple Spider-Men, also women and girls, are teaming up to stop a big evil that seems to be killing off other Spider-Men. It's been confirmed by that folks like Spider-Girl, the one that you read about, Nick, and also a big fan of that series too, Spider-Man Noir, and even a Spider-Man from Japan that had his own TV show and giant robot. Do you guys have any wishes if Yu shows up, or do you guys prefer if he's never shown or mentioned ever again? It can even be an appearance where Yu dies a grisly death. You say that like it would be better, because that sounds like something that would be in character for that series he's from, though.
I feel like it would be great if, like, he shows up and he's just this super dickhead asshole Spider-Man that all the rest of them are like, what the fuck, dude? What universe did you come from? A really angry universe that doesn't get Spider-Man! Fuck you! I'm gonna rape a chick! Like, what the fuck, Spider-Man?
My girlfriend is dead.
And then he misses his web and breaks his fucking neck, and that's the end of it. All the other Spider-Men are just like, let's never bring him up.
Number two, DC recently re-released a manga of Batman that they did back then. I guess he means a while ago. Do you guys think you'll take a look at that, or do you want to save that for a crossover or some big special event, like with Last Angry Geek or Linkara?
What was the manga?
A Batman manga with that, which I guess is where, like, Death Skull Man or whatever the hell his name is came from. I guess we'll have to look into that, basically.
I've actually wanted to do something where I could get Linkara on the show, and I've had ideas. I know he's a busy guy, so until I come to something I really want, I think it would be great. I haven't approached him about it yet.
Also, he recommends we read Shokugeki no Soma. Stop recommending we read Shokugeki no Soma. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, guys, stop recommending things 3 months ago.
let me see here. No subject, question and suggestion. Here's one. Okay. From Nathaniel Adams. Hey, Chris, Nick, and Rolozi. Listening for a few years now. Love your work. My question is, with all the new characters that we'd love to see added to the crew, what would your thoughts be on the Straw Hat Pirates finally getting a second ship with crew? They'll need a boat to catch up with Sanji and the others anyway. Also, my suggestion for either a Halloween or holiday, blah, 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 blah. Okay. I think that you're not the first person who has actually made that suggestion for, like, Luffy to get, like, start a fleet, basically. Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of characters were certainly introduced in this one that we've kind of half-jokingly said, like, oh, you know, Bartolomeo and Bellamy and so on and so forth should be in the crew and so on. So, I don't know, maybe, but the whole point of Bartolomeo joining the Straw Hats is so that he'll be able to interact with the others. Yeah. Come on, guys.
Take your fucking fawn over everybody.
Maybe.
I've heard the idea. I don't know if he'll get, like, an official crew that'll be, like, his backup, but I can imagine there'll be a bunch of pirates who are, like, if you ever need something, we'll show up, and there'll be some big moment later on where a bunch of characters, like the ones we've been introduced into this, will show up as backup. Mm. I mean, we've gotten so much emphasis on Law and, you know, him at this point. I find it impossible to believe that Law won't be affiliated with Luffy in some way going forward. I don't think he's going to join the crew, but I'm sure he'll be like, hey, if you ever need help, I'll be there to help, or something like that.
Next up from Thorsten, who says, thanks for reading my email. I am not from Norway. I am, in fact, from Germany. And my last name could also be spelled Gross. Thanks to you, I started reading Ice Shield 21, and I became interested in the sport. Following your podcast, I noticed that you mostly read realistic sport manga. Is this just a coincidence, or do you not like sport manga that says, fuck you, physics? For my suggestion, I would like you to read a soccer manga, like Captain Tsubasa. Okay. I also heard the good things about Giant Killing and Whistle.
It's sort of yes and no. I guess I do like it when there's some kind of grounding to it, but I think most sports series I like, I mean, even Ice Shield 21 has moments where you're like, well, that's fucking ridiculous. I mean, the big thing at Ice Shield 21 was the ability to run a 4.2 meter, which I don't think anyone in current professional sports has run a 4.2 flat. And even then, like, you know, several people did it. And then it was like, oh, hey, and, you know, these guys can bench, you know, half a fucking ton. And, you know, this guy can jump, you know, 16 feet into the air. Like, there was some...
These guys are Japanese high schoolers.
Yeah, I mean... So. Ice Shield 21.
I mean, Gao alone, like, makes that series incredibly unrealistic.
But there is still enough realism into it that it's not completely, like, it's not like Prince of Tennis or something like that, where, you know, physics don't have any sort of grounding in it at all. But I'm trying to think of, like, a sports series. No, because, I mean, Cross Man didn't have that silly of action to it, and I enjoyed the sports we got in that. I guess it just comes to the execution. If you're going to be over the top, then I guess the series has to make sure it's still some kind of groundedness to it, because if it becomes too unrecognizable as the sport it's supposed to be portraying, then it just ceases being enjoyable. And I lost Nick there for a moment, it looks like, because Skype sucks.
Yeah, I completely disconnected for a few seconds.
Did you hear what I said, though? Because I felt it was...
No, I did not.
Aww. I was just saying, as long as I think the series maintains some sort of grounding to at least following the rules of the sport it's based off of, then it's okay.
Yeah, I when I did my videos on Prince of Tennis, I kind of repeatedly pointed out, like, this is against the rules, that's against the rules, that's against the rules, that's against the rules. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't make sense for him to chop the ball in half because one part of the ball didn't go over the net, so therefore he doesn't get it over the net. It was like, oh, but it's so cool. It's like, he didn't get the point. Fuck you. Half the ball is over the net, and the other half is in the other half of the net. Fuck you. So stupid.
But yeah.
Thank you for your email. Let me see here. Turn. Oh, there's a downloadable thingy here. Meh. Open. Aw. Okay, I think we'll take one more.
Okay.
Let's see here. From Philip H. O with umlaut H-R-E. Nope, not gonna try.
Okay.
He says, Hallo und guten Tag from Germany. Yeah, I couldn't tell. First of all, I would like to thank you for the great job that you do every week. Your recap is always something to look forward to, and in the case of Naruto, actually more entertaining than the manga recap therein. I have three things for you. First of all, is a piece of fan art. Two of you really seem to like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, so I figured I'd dedicate a JoJo-themed artwork to you. Blah, blah, blah. In the bottom right of the image, you can see the most beloved characters from manga both recap on a regular basis. Frosh agrees! Now that I've hopefully successfully bribed you, I'd like to suggest a manga series to you. His name is Kingdom, which we covered. Should you instead be still be accepting suggestions for horror manga? Well, that's a long time ago. And last but not least, I have a question for you. Nick, you specifically mentioned the Deicide arc as the low point of Bleach, with the ensuing Fullbringer arc being very rightfully loathed by both of you. In your opinion, is the current final arc an improvement over the previous two disasters? And with that, all that is left me is to express a heartfelt Dankeschön, thank you, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, to the two of you for your hard work. Stay safe and to your wonderful efforts. Should you ever come to Germany, make sure to take a look at the largest local anime convention, the Konichi. It's basically like Oktoberfest, just with less beer and more wigs.
Is that more appealing? You took out the fun part of Oktoberfest, and now it's just sausages and wigs.
There's no alcohol there, just homesuck cosplayers. Well, then I'm not going. The current final arc, is it better than the Fullbringer arc and the Deicide arc?
I mean...
Yes?
Yes.
Because it has to be?
Yes and no. I mean, we don't know how this one ends yet. So, I mean, we could be due for an even worse dip. But it's been better, at least on the premise of... It felt like it's had a purpose. The Fullbringer arc just felt so worthless.
It was always intended to be a very short, like, catch your breath and nothing important's going to happen, so just take it easy while Kubo doesn't really bother coming up with a compelling story or compelling characters. Ichigo just has his powers back now, and that's the only purpose of this. It's like a filler arc, honestly. Mm-hmm. But the Deicide arc was... It was bad because it had years of build-up going into it, and it disappointed hard. This arc, I don't think, can possibly be as bad as Deicide was, because almost everything in this was not really hinted at until now. The only thing that we knew was that the Quincy's had been exterminated, and now suddenly they're back for revenge. But it's not like, here's Yu Habak, and he's the main villain at chapter 100, and he's going to finally be defeated at chapter 500-something or other. It's, you know, like, here's Yu Habak. He's our main villain, and he's going to be dead in 200 chapters at most.
I think part of it is also just that there's no expectations for this arc, per se.
Yep.
I think at this point, we're all just kind of like, let's see what Kubo can do now. All right, brain in a jar, okay. That was stupid.
He's like, everything is going to be... all society is dying, and all these people that you care about, you totally care about, are dying. Look, Sasakibe's dead.
Who?
Unohana's dead and never coming back.
How did you just get to that? There were like three fucking softballs lobbed up for that Unohana joke, and you whiffed on all of them.
Yeah, one of my next step back.
I was like, I even threw those on. I was like, I could have spent more time on things like Unohana versus Kenpachi. I was like, that doesn't even really make sense, but Nick will easily get the Unohana joke out of that.
Obviously, I have to push it later and later in the episode each time until it's like, we do the sign off and then 5 seconds go by and they're going, Unohana's dead.
Next week, it's just another episode that gets released, just Unohana's dead, never come back, click. And that's the end of the episode.
Like an awkward note that none of us know what to say. Oh, yeah. But yeah, thanks everyone for your emails and stuff. I think we're going to wrap up here. We had an almost 2-hour show. And we said we weren't going to go 2.5 hours this time.
Yeah,
so
we'll be in here. I guess we should just say then what's going to be happening again for the next couple weeks, because there's no Jump next week. There will be Crunchyroll, but I don't want to do an entire episode just for two manga, essentially. So, and because it's the Christmas season, what we'll think we'll do is either Tuesday night or Monday night. We still haven't decided on that. So the 22nd or the 23rd. What's going to happen is we'll do kind of like a very informal episode of Weekly Manga Recap, which is actually going to be us playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Against one another. We'll live up to that duel that me and Nick are meant to challenge each other on.
It's going to be similar to the Go episode we did.
Yeah, so I imagine we'll be here, we'll be looking at the chat, we'll be chatting, may answer some Q&As and stuff like that, but it won't be like a recorded episode or anything like that. I might just highlight it afterwards, so if you want to check it out and you can't make it there live, you can still see it, but it won't be released as an episode or anything like that. The week after that, I don't know if you have New Year's Eve plans.
I don't know.
Okay. I imagine that week we may also have to move, just because New Year's Eve is when we normally record. So it's possible we may have to change. But that should be a regular episode, I think. We should have Jump that week, if I recall correctly. And then the week after that, the first week of January is when we'll be doing our year-end recap.
Because there's not going to be manga that week either.
I think it'll be Crunchyroll, but again, we'll just probably hold off on it a week.
Alright. Well, yeah. Thanks everyone for joining us for this episode of Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show on twitch.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up, so follow us on Twitter to stay updated. I'm YRoloFDime and he is RoloT. Also be sure to send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read, either in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Special thanks to Steaman, our tile cards. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And also special thanks to The Infamous Planet for all of the awesome visual editions of the podcast that he has made on his YouTube channel, which is The Infamous Planet.
You have to make sure you get the in there, though.
Yes, it is very important. Infamous Planet does not have anything on his channel. So yeah, that's gonna do it. Bye.
Yeah. do we have anything else? Any other interesting tidbits or points we wanted to go out on?
I already said Unana was dead. I could do some sort of rousing speech, like at the end of an episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where they vow to defeat someone. I don't know.
You could. Are you going to?
No.
Well, happy holidays.
Because all I can think of right now, all of the moments I can remember, I watched in Japanese, and so, yeah.
Okay.
It probably wouldn't sound nearly as cool in English, or with me doing it.
All right, well, happy holidays, everybody.